The World Bank has released an economic forecast for the coming years. The bank says there's a risk of the return of 1970-style stagflation when prices go up quickly but economic growth stalls at the same time. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Were you there for that stagflation back in the 1970s? Do you worry that we're likely to see that happen again? Do you have questions about how the global economy is functioning? Do you see a lot of good news in the economy with the job numbers? Do you worry about the inflation that you see when you buy gas and other products? Maybe a little of both. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Mark Koplovich is a professor of political science and public affairs and director of European studies at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Mark, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me back.
I know you're skeptical about some of the predictions that people are making about stagflation. We'll get into that in just a moment. But first of all, can you remind us, what do we mean when we say stagflation?
Well, so I actually think my skepticism is because there's a lot of looseness and fuzziness about how people use the term stagflation, right? So I am just old enough to remember stagflation sitting in the gas lines with my dad in the second oil shock. But, you know, when we use the term stagflation, people have always meant what happened from about 1974 until 1980, right? So in the U.S., we had unemployment was 7 to 9%. Stayed above 5% for a decade. Inflation was 12 to 15%, and we had several bouts of negative economic growth, right? So that's sort of the classic era of stagflation in the 1970s and going into the early 80s was sort of those levels of negative economic growth, high unemployment, and persistently high inflation. And so, you know, we have very high inflation today relative to where we've been for the last 40 years, but unemployment is historically low. Right, we're at 3.6%. Economic growth is positive. Right, we've just basically completed an unprecedentedly rapid and total recovery economically from the pandemic shock. And until last month, real wages were higher than they had been right in 2019. So if you look at household income, investment levels, growth, consumption, all of these things. Even with high inflation, the average person in the United States is better off now than they were right prior to the pandemic. So, you know, what we're having now is a set of challenges facing the U.S. and especially the world economy, as the World Bank talked about, but it's nothing like this stagflation era that we had in the 1970s.
The concept of stagflation is kind of economically weird, right? Because if you've got a recession and there's high unemployment, that's supposed to bring down inflationary pressures. They shouldn't necessarily go hand in hand, the high inflation and unemployment, right? Why is this kind of a rare beast?
Right. So we tend to think about when inflation is high, unemployment, inflation kind of move in opposite directions. Mm-hmm. That gets at what caused the stagflation in the 1970s was you had the twin oil shocks in 73, 74, and 78, 79. So oil prices, I think, quadrupled, right, in that period. And so, you know, in addition to the underlying drivers of when the economy is doing well and there's economic growth, there also tends to be modest inflation because things are doing well. And when demand is lower because unemployment is higher and people don't have as much income, there tends to be less inflation. You know, that sort of policy-induced business cycle type of inflation. In the 70s, it hit up against the fact that oil prices were rising so fast that was driving up inflation along with the kind of economic downturn we were having. So that's, I think, a little bit of what the World Bank is concerned about now is we're seeing that with energy and food prices rising, both because of the supply shocks of the pandemic and now the war in Ukraine. Right, especially with energy prices and food prices, because Ukraine isn't able to export because of the blockade of the Black Sea, and Russia is not exporting as much in terms of food. So we're seeing some of those things. But again, the overall performance in terms of the cycle of the economy, the U.S. economy had recovered very well, and you know the world economy, absent the pandemic, had been starting to recover. Right. So there's headwinds now in that Europe hasn't recovered as much as the U.S. China has another round of COVID. Right. So there's I think what the World Bank is calling out is there's a bunch of ominous clouds on the horizon that could mean slower economic growth and higher inflation over the next couple of years. But again, the magnitude of those shocks relative to the quadrupling of oil prices in the 1970s, we're talking orders of magnitude different.
Talking to Mark Koplovich, professor of political science and public affairs at UW-Madison, looking at what's next for the U.S. and global economies. Some dire predictions out there of stagflation, potentially. The World Bank says, hold on a minute, doesn't look quite that bad. You can join in with your concerns or the positive signs you see in the economy globally, nationally, or in your own community. 800-642-1234 is the number for your comments or questions. That's 800-642-1234. Mark, let's tease things apart now. In the current day, we've got inflation, as you say, higher than normal for the last handful of years, not as high as that that era in the 70s we've been talking about. To what extent is this a U.S. story of inflation versus a global story of inflation?
Yeah, there's a lot of debate and discussion of this. I fall down very much in line with what Janet Yellen told Congress yesterday, which is that, you know, the inflation is primarily a global shock because of the pandemic, because of the supply chain problems, because of the war in Ukraine. And incrementally on top of that, the U.S. has had higher inflation until the last month or so than other major economies in the world because of the fiscal stimulus we had, right? The American Rescue Plan and stimulus checks and whatnot. That contributed, the estimates I've seen, on the order of 2 to 3% of what is 8.5% inflation, right? So if you think about the differentials between the United States and Europe, those have closed in the last month or two because Europe is much more vulnerable to the energy and food shocks than the United States is. But the majority of the inflation has been this common global shock. Right. I mean, if you look across the advanced industrialized countries, you basically see Canada, Germany, the UK, the US, the rest of the European Union. You see a similar 5-6% increase in inflation, right, since the pandemic. Now, ours was higher in the middle of last year by 2-2.5 percentage points because of the economic stimulus. But at the same time, we've had a massively successful near total economic recovery, and other countries, especially the European countries, still are way behind us in terms of the scope of their economic recovery. So there's a bit of a trade-off, right? You've got this global shock causing inflation around the world. You have incrementally higher inflation on the order of about 2-3% in the U.S. because of the fiscal stimulus and the American Rescue Plan. But the trade-off is we've had a much faster, more successful economic recovery. Again, unemployment is back down to 3.6%. Real income and consumption, so if you control for inflation and you look at household income and you look at how much households are able to buy and consume, those levels are actually higher than they were in 2019 prior to the pandemic, right? So, you know, I know we all go to the pump and we see we're paying, you know, $4.89 for gas, I think it was this week, and, you know, prices are going up. But people's incomes went up over the last year and a half as well. And so the real inflation adjusted living standards actually have not declined. And until this month, actually, the wage increases that we had seen over the last year or so were outpacing inflation, right? So that's not true for those at the higher end of the income scale in the last month or so. That's still true for those at the lower end of the socioeconomic scale, that nominal wage increases have outpaced inflation over the last year. So it's a mixed bag, right? You know, there are serious problems, but again, there's a lot in the news about how dire and terrible things are that are at odds with the data and the evidence.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Shane is with us in Madison. Shane, hi.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. Your guest just actually touched on it, but I was wondering if they could comment further on the impact on the people at the lower end of the economy, because they're feeling the effects of the inflation a lot more than, I would say, the average U.S. citizen. And even if average household incomes are doing better than where they were 2 years ago, I feel like the impact is felt more severely on people at the lower end of the income scale.
Shane, thanks for that call. For someone at that lower end of the scale, even if their wages went up, the percentage of their income, I think, going to their gas and housing and food, that stuff they have to spend money on, that is going to have a big bite on them, right? Right, Mark?
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, inflation does have a regressive impact, right? And sort of especially if it is on energy and food and essentials, it hits people at the lower end of the income scale much harder. But again, the wage growth that we have seen, right? There's been a lot about the worker shortage in the news for the last year or so. And wage increases at the lower end of the income scale have been much higher than at the top of the income scale. So it's sort of hard to say for any particular person, right, what is the net effect. But the narrative about how much people are suffering from inflation is really at odds with the data that we have, in that, you know, living standards, again, any inflation adjusted metric that you look at in terms of wages, household income, consumption, those have, you know, held steady or increased since prior to the pandemic, right? So for certain individuals, that's not true. For certain parts of the income scale, that's not true. But overall, for most people in the United States, that's true. It's also true that the stimulus checks, the child tax credit, the various, you know, fiscal policies that were put in place in 2021 went more to people at the lower end of the income scale than at the higher end. So, you know, again, this is not to say that people aren't hurting, that inflation doesn't have distributional effects, but the scale of the narrative of how bad things are and the cost for people is kind of, you know, out of proportion to what I think we see in the data in terms of where most people are relative to where they were 2 years ago.
Talking to Mark Koplovich, professor of political science and public affairs at UW-Madison, looking at the World Bank's economic forecast for the coming years. Some concerns, some bright spots, he says. You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your thoughts or questions. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We pick up our talk now with UW-Madison political scientist Mark Koplovich about the future of the global economy, concerns about inflation, potential recession, but very low unemployment going on in the United States right now. Let's go back to your calls at 800-642-1234. Youngston is with us in Rice Lake. Youngston, hi.
Hi. My name's Jonathan, actually. But
Jonathan, I'm sorry. I think we misheard that.
Yeah, no problem. I remember back in the early 70s, I was about 10 to 12, right in that area. And I remember the economy being fairly good until the OPEC crisis, gas prices went up. And then things really spun out of hand, you know, everything. We had a farm and corn went from $30 a ton to $150 a ton in about 2 months, and different things like that. And on another note, during that same time, a fourth grade, fifth grade teacher, he explained how the economy works and inflation and all that. And basically what he said is when people get an increase in wages, you know, a substantial amount of increase, like nationally, then you're going to have inflation follow it, because what's going to happen is all the prices are going to be increased. And so until everything catches up, you're going to have inflation.
I gotcha. Wow. Mark, you gave us two big things to talk there. First of all, wage-driven inflation. Wages go up, so I could charge you more stuff because I know you have more money.
Right. Right. So this is, you know, the jargon for this is the wage price inflationary spiral. And the caller was right. That was, you know, that was a big concern, not just in the U.S., but across the world in the 1970s. There's very little evidence of that right now, right? We sort of, the data we have, what we know is driving inflation. Last year, it was primarily the supply chain problems, right? There were meat processing shortages, so meat prices went up. There were shipping problems. There were semiconductor shortages, so car prices went up. So the bulk of that was not driven by demand side and wage side inflation. And now, if you look in both the US and Europe in the last several months, right, the big things we know, the vast majority of the inflation is energy and food prices. Right. So So the, you know, the wage growth is a component, right? And the fiscal stimulus that is linked to income is a component. But again, it wasn't the primary driver last year in the United States or globally, and it's not the primary driver now. And you see that in sort of market expectations too, right? So there's a lot of concern of, all right, in the future, now expectations have become unanchored that there's going to be high inflation. But if you look at the surveys that are done on this about what do market actors expect inflation to be in 5 years from now, it's not much higher than what they expected inflation to be 5 years from now prior to the pandemic. Right. So we just there's not much evidence at all at this point for that sort of wage price inflationary spiral.
Thanks a lot for that call. Willie joins us next in Madison. Willie, hi.
Hi. Well, this is sort of nostalgic, actually, because I, of course, being old, remember very well the Ford administration and the Carter administration. Is there any chance they're going to try to deal with this problem like Ford early on did, where they were passing out buttons that said WIN to everybody? That stood for Whip Inflation Now. Well, when that first didn't work in the first month, they pointed out that you could take that button, turn it upside down, and it would spell NIM, and that stood for No Immediate Miracles.
Willie, thanks a lot for the call. I don't think the buttons themselves worked, but Mark, on a serious note though, for it's partly at least a global problem for an American government. What options do they have apart from buttons to try to whip inflation now?
Right. I mean, this is the huge political problem, right? So not surprisingly, the opposition in every country, not just in the US, wants to pin inflation on the domestic policy choices of the local government, right? So, you know, a lot of the narrative about it was all about the American Rescue Plan and Biden's policies, or, you know, Jay Powell's policies at the Fed. Is that sort of standard politics? Look, the uncomfortable reality for an incumbent politician is most of the inflation is currently being driven by these global shocks, and there's relatively little that you can do about that in policy terms. You know, so the U.S. has, the Biden administration has kept the tariffs that Donald Trump had. And, you know, the Peterson Institute in D.C. just had a report out today that you could probably knock a point or two off of inflation by repealing those tariffs, because consumers pay the tariff cost of, you know, rising prices for imported goods. The administration has been releasing oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, but that's pushing back against the global prices. You know, ending the war in Ukraine, if someone had a magic solution to do that quickly, you know, would alleviate the energy and food price shocks. But the difficult political reality for the Biden administration and for incumbent governments elsewhere, right, is that these are global shocks, right? So, you know, inflation will come down when the pandemic is finally done. Inflation will come down when the Russia-Ukraine war is over. Inflation may come down on energy as we ramp up alternatives, right? The Europeans are desperately trying to ramp up alternatives to Russian natural gas. That's going to happen over the next 2 years. That's not going to solve the inflation problem in the next 6 months. And same with food, right? And so look, a lot of these concerns, actually, the much bigger concern, and this is what the World Bank report really, I think, was focusing on, are for developing countries. Mm-hmm. Right, which are going to be hit much more by the commodity price shocks and the food prices, and also the spillover effects. If the U.S., if the Federal Reserve and the European Central Bank start raising interest rates to try and reduce inflation, many countries borrow in foreign currency, especially in dollars. And so their debt is denominated in dollars. And when the U.S. raises interest rates, that's going to cause, you know, problems for them to pay their debts. So for developing countries, this is a much bigger shock than it is for rich countries like the United States. That was one of the concerns in the World Bank report is, you know, as many people probably remember, one of the things that followed on from the oil shocks and stagflation was the Latin American debt crisis. Right. When Paul Volcker raised interest rates in 1980 in the United States, that led to skyrocketing debt costs for Mexico, Argentina, Brazil, Venezuela. And you could see, you know, one of the concerns in the World Bank report was debt problems and defaults and things like that in developing countries looking ahead. So there's a lot of warning signs, right? And there's a lot of concerns, as I said. and inflation is a serious problem. It's still at this point, we were talking about the previous caller said, you know, fivefold increase in prices, right? That's not what we've seen with energy prices and even gas prices in the US. When you do adjust for inflation, gas prices in the US are lower now than they were in 2008 even. So there's still a long ways to go.
Just briefly on our last minute, we've got a few callers wanting to hear more about oil, some concern that oil companies are profiteering here, why demand isn't going down. Your thoughts, Mark, on oil and gas in particular?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of political talk and chatter. Again, anytime there's inflation, there are claims that a lot of this is about opportunistic price increases and greed of corporations and things like that. I don't think that is the fundamental driver of what's going on. Again, these are global shocks because of big, you know, public health and international security shocks to the system that are leading to supply chain problems and shortages, right? And that's going to drive prices up. So, you know, even if on the margin there's some incremental greed or kind of price gouging by corporations and oil companies, I think that's a really small portion of what's actually going on with inflation.
And very briefly, Mark, inflation at its current levels, how long do you think it's here to stay?
It's already coming down in the U.S. I mean, the stimulus-driven part of inflation is pretty much over, and we're sort of dealing with the global shock in the U.S. You know, I think one of the things that happens is you get this thing called base effects, which is you're looking at inflation relative to where it was a year ago. Right. And so part of what has driven the really high inflation rates is that inflation was really low for a very long time. And then suddenly we had a spike, and relative to where it was in 2020, right, January 2020 or 2019, things were much, much higher. So the growth in inflation has already come down, but the level is high. Right. And so I think we're still, you know, a year or two away until we're back to, you know, probably talking about 3% inflation or something like that. But
and we'll leave it there. Thanks to Mark Koplovich, professor of political science and public affairs at UW-Madison, with us looking at inflation, a possible global recession, and more.